Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you are listening. I'm Bob Zimmerman here with Zach McLeod and Will Stevens, and you are listening to Backfield Banter. We got a special guest on today. We got Jacob Mizorowski. I'm with the Brewers, currently in AAA. Hopefully that won't last too long, Jake. Get up there soon. But yeah, excited to have you on. We've heard this is your favorite podcast.
It sure is.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, yep. Just wanted to make sure. Yep. Avid listener, you didn't even know it existed until about 3 seconds ago. But But we're glad to have you on. And so we're going to talk a little bit about your career from Grain Valley. Played high school ball there. Went to Crowder for a year or 2 years, right? 2 years. That's right. Injured on the first bunt of the season.
It was first pitch, first play of the season. Man, yeah, okay, it was the first inning. Yeah, it was the start.
Why don't we start there, Jake? So hold on, I guess let me back up. So you originally committed to Oklahoma State, correct?
Yes.
And then decommitted to go to a junior college because you wanted another shot at the draft? Or
yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So because was your draft year out of high school COVID?
It was. So there's only five rounds or something crazy like that.
They had the condensed draft that year, so only 5 rounds. So it was a really weird draft, too. And then it went to where they were just taking people that would sign instead of, people that deserved those spots. So it was really unique. And so, yeah, not having the chance as a senior in high school and not even having a senior season. Is that right, too?
Yeah completely gone. Yeah.
So, yeah, you missed out on that. So then go to Crowder to have another shot at the draft and then kind of – you fill in from there. So
yeah, made it through all fall, made it through, hell week, whatever you want to call it, made it through it all and finally get to games. We're excited for a season and, first outing, made it an inning and a third and tore my meniscus on my right leg. So was completely out for that season and then got back healthy towards the very end of summer. So I got to do a few of the showcases in the summer and went down to, the draft combine and did some stuff down there and then had a really good season the next year and, got picked up by the Brewers. So now we're here.
So yes, fun fact, me and Jake and Zach, you're going to love this.
Yeah.
So my latest knee surgery, I had the microfracture surgery.
Yeah.
They drill into your bone and let
Same
the bone
here.
Marrow. So yeah,
Same
great here. Surgery. Yeah. But anyway, so I'm getting my surgery and I look up at the board on the schedule and the next surgery is Jacob Mizorowski.
Oh, nice.
we had back-to-back surgeries on our knees.
By the same doctor.
Was yours the cartilage injury? Is that what you had, Bob?
Yeah, so torn meniscus. I have no cartilage left in that knee.
Correct. I have the same. Mine wasn't the meniscus. It was the cartilage underneath the kneecap. So that was that was surgery between my junior and senior year of college. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah.
Not fun. And then we had the surgeries, Jake, and then that's really when me and you started hanging out a lot.
Yes.
And we really revamped. I made you do those damn cross throws for probably 2 months.
Weeks and weeks and weeks.
I know you hated me making you do those, but...
I did, yes.
But got you locked in on your release and the ball flight and your axis, so...
Yep.
So it's okay now. You don't got to do them anymore unless you
mess up again. Exactly, which hope never happens, but you never know.
Hope never happens. But yeah, so then you get healthy, go to Crowder, and I'm going to let Zach spout off some of your numbers at Crowder, and then maybe you could talk a little bit more about that season.
So before we do that, Jake, I know we just met before this, but I actually, when you were 16 on the Royal Scout team, I actually wrote a report on you. I was doing an
really
internship
funny enough.
With the, I was doing an internship with the... Tampa Bay Rays. I was a volunteer amateur scout with Matt Allison. I'm sure you've met Matt before.
Yeah, of course. Yes.
But yeah, I saw you were in 16. It was the Royal Scout team. A bunch of guys were playing pro ball now. Robert Moore was there.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Smith.
Former teammate. There.
What was that?
Former teammate, Robert
That's
Moore.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then, I forgot. He was drafted by the Milwaukee.
By the Brewers, yeah.
And then Marcus Smith with the Rangers was there. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Jorgensberg, something like
Josenberg.
Josenberg, yes. Yeah. He was at, I think he went to KU and then Arkansas and he got drafted a couple years ago. So it was a good team.
I don't remember.
Good draft. It was top five, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Orioles.
So a lot of really good players. Kendall Diggs was there. He's with Arkansas still. But yeah, so I wrote that. Just the biggest thing I remember, and I was going to ask you some of this, but I think it was like right around 40 to 45 pitches. You're always like 92, and then the velo would drop. And I remember a bunch of scouts were like, well, you know, it's weight. It's, you know, once he kind of matures, like all that velo is going to sustain and it'll jump and all this stuff. And so a little background on me, I work for on the strength conditioning side full time. I work with all of our pro and college hitters. And so, you know, on the strength side, we always talk about guys like getting the weight room, add weight, you know, all this stuff. Was that something that the scouts were telling you out of high school? Is that part of the reason you went junior college, is to take another crack at the draft and do that? Or what do you think's kind of helped with that? I know you're kind of a lean guy, I guess, and still are. So has that had any obstacles, or do you feel like just with maturity, your velo sustained and all that?
I mean, yeah, I think the scouts were definitely saying that I needed to gain weight, you know, that would help with all of this. And so I don't think it helped all that much. I think it more just was like getting older and be able to understand my body a little better.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was more on the side of like actually gaining weight and getting stronger. I think it was more just like growing up and shaping my body to what I need. Cause like I'm still sitting at, you know, 200 pounds, which for a guy of my size,
much stronger than you were.
Yeah. 100%. But it's still like, I feel like it's not one of those things that like it's weight.
You need mass.
Yeah.
I was more like that flexible, weird, whippy guy than, you know, a guy that sits back on his back legs and like really uses his legs to the full potential.
And I would say, like, you see guys that are really thin, like, obviously, you know, Chris Sale is a guy that I'm sure people were kind of like comparing you body wise to, like, thinner guy. And I think a lot of that, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's gaining weight, but it's also just like getting stronger, like you're saying, more mature. And, you know, when you're 16, you just haven't thrown a baseball as much, and you probably weren't in the weight room as much as you were whenever you went to junior college, and now you're in pro ball. It's just part of your lifestyle now.
100%.
But yeah, I just remember that very vividly. I think I saw you throw three or four times. And, I had a really hard time pronouncing your name at the time. And so I've kind of followed along and I guess we can get to your career at Crowder. So Bob kind of already talked about you came off the mound for a bunt, tore the meniscus, came back for the second year. Had a really good year, 15 starts, 76 innings, 136 strikeouts, 2.7 ERA. Was there anything, because I think when guys get injured, right, you kind of get something taken away from you. And this is something that, you know, I experienced when we were all talking about our knee injuries, is you kind of have to like get creative and learn how to get better. And you have a time when you can't do as much. So what were some things you learned during that time? And then what were some things that you feel like you really got better at, you know, from your freshman year to your sophomore year?
I think the big thing was just being patient. I mean, there's nothing you can do. You're literally just waiting. I mean, school is a big thing. So I think that was also a huge help to take my mind off of like my knee and be able to, you know, do classes and actually have something to do with my day instead of just, you know, sitting in a chair, going to work out for an hour, going to Bob's for an hour, and then being done and doing nothing. So I think that was a big thing, to find something to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that I'm not a big reader, but I like read a lot that summer because I was like, man, I just can't do anything. I can't bend my knee 90 degrees for like 3 months. So you got to get really, really creative. And we've talked a lot. Like we've had John Means on as a JUCO guy. We've just had Robbie Glendinning, who is also a JUCO guy. Like, you know, we probably ask this too much now, but like, how important were those innings in that time at a junior college? Because we see a lot of kids, they want to commit to the biggest and best school right away. But we talk a lot about fit, getting to play. It's hard to replace innings on the mound or innings or at bats in the box. And so maybe you can kind of talk about Crowder and how beneficial that was for you before getting drafted by the Brewers.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I'm going to say that Crowder was amazing. And I mean, you know, I went there because of the head coach and being able to have a huge relationship with him. You know, he's awesome. He's a great guy. But I think it's the most important thing was definitely just getting innings in and playing more than just like a fall scrimmage. When games actually mean something, it's different. It's different than like just a live at bat to a guy, you know.
Yeah, a different gear, man.
it's you have to find it. And I mean, it's one of those things that you kind of you don't understand till you're actually in it. And once you're in it, you're like, I want this again and again and again till, you know, you can't.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Being the outdoor cat.
Yeah, that's right. We talk a lot about that 100%. Indoor and outdoor cats. You got to have guys that are outdoor cats that want to get out there and compete and figure out how to get outs.
Yep.
And exactly. We know that you throw 100 miles an hour, but you still have to get outs with that. You see guys that throw 100 and struggle. So and see how important it is, like learning how to get those outs. And the only way you can do that is actually pitching innings. But yeah, so how was the team at Crowder? You guys are traditionally a good JUCO. So you can kind of talk about that and the team and how that season all wrapped up.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't wrap up the way we were hoping, but, you know, we made a pretty good run at it. We made it to the Grand Junction. So it was exciting to, you know, make it to the World Series with the JUCO team. But, you know, those guys were awesome. And we had a pretty good team that year. So, you know,
yeah, it looks like you guys won 54 games. So it's hard to.
It's hard to say that's bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Making a Grand Junction for guys, people out there, that's where the Division One World Series is held. So obviously, you guys had a good year. Who'd you guys play out there?
We played Central Arizona and we beat them the first round. And then I forget, we lost the next game after that. And then we went back and played Central Arizona to lose, which Central Arizona actually ended up winning. So,
yeah, they're funny good enough. Every year. Yeah. Man. They're really
every year.
So, well, obviously you guys had a good year. Maybe you can kind of talk to us about your draft process, Bob. I'm sure you're involved with that. So maybe you guys can kind of talk about, you know, what were the scouts saying? Did you commit anywhere else in case you wanted to forego the draft slot? Like kind of talk about all those decisions you had to make during that sophomore year.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think it wasn't more of a forego the draft. I think it was more of a leverage position.
Yeah.
And saying like, hey, if you guys don't give me the money I'm looking for, then it turns into I'm just going to go to a really good D1 and play baseball there. So I was committed to LSU for that junior season. So it was either, you know, get drafted or go. Yeah. You know,
yeah,
go
you,
there.
Skeens, Cruz, still a Cruz. It would have been pretty good squad.
It would have been a crazy team. So yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think I was more using that as a leverage against the teams. You know, you're going to try and give every advantage to yourself over the teams because they're trying to make as much money as they can off you. So you should be doing the same. So, but yeah, no, I think they were all saying that I was looking at getting drafted, but the money that I was looking for wasn't exactly there. So come draft time, I was pretty dead set that I was going to college. And
maybe back up a little bit and talk about the combine though, because in my eyes, the combine really helped you.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, I think going into the combine, I was like one of those guys that it was like, it might be there, it might not be there. And then, yeah, I go to the combine and, you know, so 100 and I think I had 101 there. And really lit up the radar gun and showed off some off-speed pitches that helped a lot, you know. And that's when I think I really jumped was that combine.
Yeah, I think you set the combine velo record like 9 times in a row or something on your fastball. It was something pretty amazing. And then, like, I mean, I know firsthand the data that the scouts, that the Brewers specifically got from that. I mean, almost like broke their model that they use because of because your extension, your release height, and the velo on top of it. Where if you didn't go to the combine, they wouldn't have had that because you hadn't been throwing on TrackMan.
Exactly. I mean, Crowder didn't have a TrackMan. Actually, the year after I left, they just now got a TrackMan and they had one.
Did they really?
They just got one. So
okay. Well, that's good.
So
JUCO,
no,
I coached that way at a Rapsodo in a lot of places. Didn't have, I mean, seriously, and they're just expensive. It's, I mean, honestly, like when you're working at a JUCO, you got the head coach that's full time, and you got a couple assistants that are like
three part time guys. Yeah,
yeah. They may one of them may be declared like quote unquote full time, but the paycheck is not full time. Like just those little extra things where like you're like, hey, we're gonna set this up and we're gonna do this and that. It's like. Sometimes, like for me, I was working a job in the morning, going straight from there, working with hitters in the, you know, basically 11 to 3 and then going straight to practice and running weights after. I mean, it was just, they were long day. Yeah, it was a lot. Yeah. It was a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's having that kind of stuff, that kind of equipment at like a junior college or a smaller 4-year is kind of like it's becoming more and more now, but it's not surprising that you hadn't thrown on a track, man, and then you go there and everybody's like, what is happening right now?
Yeah,
so that's really cool.
100%. I was one of those guys that kind of snuck under and was unnoticed. I wasn't really known by most players, so it was fun to go out there. I have a lot more friends because of that and that experience.
Yeah, and the draft, MLB draft, it's, I don't really know. I mean, I followed the last couple years, but I feel like it's kind of new. I don't really know when they started it, but.
So my year was the first year.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Cause like I watched it, I put it on whenever, we had the kids in, they were all working out in the afternoon, evening last year, last summer. And I threw it on. And I think it's good because, like, they're like, whoa, that guy just hit one like 105. And I'm like, yeah, these guys are, everybody's good. They only invite 150.
Exactly.
But it's kind of funny. You probably showed up and people didn't really know who you were because you weren't, you know, in high school or at a big Power Five. And then you're throwing 101 and breaking the record. And they're all like, turn around going, who is this guy?
Jake, have you ever gone back and watched the broadcast of it?
No, but I know was it Trevor Hoffman was standing there with some of the announcers. It was some big guy. They were standing like a 5 foot away from me.
Yeah.
And they were just like, holy cow.
They were in mid sentence and they were talking about something completely different. And then you threw your first fastball and they stopped mid sentence. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, now we got everybody's attention.
Yeah. So no, it was cool.
Which isn't super surprising because I think you came in earlier this year and I just kind of like peeked around the corner. So like I said, I've followed you since you were in high school and you were throwing and I heard you just say like, yeah, this is the first time I've thrown since the season. You just step back and it was like 100 miles an hour. I was like, sweet. Must be nice.
When Jake's worried about his velo, it's only 97.99 today. I'm kind of worried.
Obviously, the combine went well. Helped your draft stock a lot. I'm not gonna float your money around there because it's you know, you can Google it, but your signing bonus, your leverage worked.
It did.
So great job. Great decision.
Thank you.
I know it would have been fun playing with Skeens and Cruz and getting a ring, but I think your future self will be thanking you for that decision that you made. So yeah, you get drafted. Kind of talk to us about what that was like, what that call was like, you know, who you're with, your family, all that.
Yeah. I mean, I was with, you know, family and friends and deciding. My agent was the first one to call me and told me like, hey, don't be picking up phone calls from now on. Like only pick it up if it's this team. And I was like, okay, what do you mean? And he's like, you'll understand. So we're going through and he like gives me a round. He's like, hey, it's probably going to be like 62 or 64. Anyways, so number starts coming and all of a sudden we get to like the 61st pick, which is like the pick before 63rd or 61st. I can't remember exactly, but it was like the pick before and it was the White Sox. And all of a sudden I get a call from the Chicago area code. And I'm like, I was told the Brewers and I text my agent and I'm like, hey, like did something change? Am I picking up the call from Chicago? And he's like, no, don't pick that up. So I don't pick it up. And the White Sox select some other dude. And then all of a sudden Brewers come up, they pick me. It's exciting. You know, they're really excited in there. The GM was the one who called me. So no, it was good. You know, wasn't exactly sure of what was going on and seemed like a blur, but you know, long story short, it was what I wanted to do. But come to find out, the phone call that I received during the pick before was actually the Chicago White Sox, and they were going to pick me up in the 61st pick over the Brewers and mess up my selection with the Brewers. So it was kind of weird.
Pick up the phone.
Yeah. So it's a weird experience, Brewers, but it was an interesting one.
Yeah. And the Brewers, just outside looking in, I think they're a really good organization. I did some interviews with them. And I just feel like they've had a ton of success. Obviously, they're a small market team. They're not spending as much money as, you know, like you're seeing the Dodgers and the Mets and the Yankees and the Red Sox and stuff like that, but they compete year in and year out. And specifically, they do a really good job with pitching. So it's you know, it's a great organization. It was a great landing spot. I'm sure you've loved it there. Yeah, I'm really happy 100%. For you and all that. But so you get drafted, you do all that. How quickly do you have to go out to the Carolina Mudcats? How quick was that transition?
Oh, like forever. I sat in AZL for 2 months, something around there. Sat around for like 2 months. Wasn't throwing, wasn't doing anything. Where they were like, hey, we're shutting you down for the year. You're not going to throw. All of a sudden, season ends in AZL. It ends like 2 weeks before like the minor league season. So we're sitting around. We're not really doing anything. They're like, guys are starting to pack up, you know, starting to go home. All of a sudden, I get a call from one of the guys at the facility. Was like, hey, can you come in? I need to talk with you. So I go in and they're like, hey, we're actually going to send you to the Mudcats for the last week of the season. We need you to get ramped up. I haven't thrown a baseball in, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks. And I'm like, what? So all of a sudden they're like, hey, let's go. Come on. We need to hurry. So I ramp myself up for like 2-3 innings. They throw me in the Mudcats. First game, I throw like 6 innings just out of the blue, like ramped up on like 2-3 innings. So my first MLB appearance was not ready, not like 100% go, but, you know, we made it work. We threw probably 2 or 3 more.
I don't think you've ever told me that part, Jake.
Yeah, it was a crazy first ever show in the pro ball. Yeah, so it was kind of crazy. It was definitely wasn't ready for it. Was it, you know, expecting to go home and not really do anything that year, but, you know. Got a few outings in.
Plans change, man.
Got to get it going.
100%. So, no, it was an interesting first year. Yeah.
How was the following off season? Because I know it's probably long. I never played pro ball, but it's probably long. You get through your whole JUCO season. You guys basically go almost as far as you can. You get to the World Series. You're playing there. You get drafted. You know, you're doing the stuff in the AZL. You make your first, you know, pro appearance. And then you have an off season. So like, how long was that first year? Did it feel like it was long? Like, how was that off season? Did you have an idea of kind of what you needed to do? Or was it just like,
well, it got even longer at that point, right, Jay?
Yeah. Yeah. So it went from being, okay, this isn't going to be that bad to, you know, holy shit, when am I actually going to go home? You know, so I wrap up that season, throw my like two, three outings out in North Carolina. And then all of a sudden they're like, hey, we're actually going to send you back to Arizona for a, I can't remember what it was called. I think it was like a weight camp or something, some strength camp,
something like that.
So I spend another 2 months there, finally get to go home for Thanksgiving. And what, Bob, I was with you for maybe 2 months from Thanksgiving to Christmas.
Yeah, I think.
And as soon as Christmas comes by, New Year's roll by, I'm out back to Arizona and I'm doing a get ready for spring training camp. I don't know what you want to call it. So you were a camp kid.
You're a camp kid that
well, I was a camp kid. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I went to every camp. I stayed the whole camp. Yeah. No, it was a very, very, very short off season. Didn't really get to be home for much, you know, but.
Yeah,
you know,
and you're only 20. So it's like the most extended amount of time you've ever been away from home, I'm sure. Especially exactly. Since you went to a JUCO pretty close to home.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, JUCO was maybe 2 hours.
Yeah. And so I'm sure now, like, it probably wouldn't be as bad, but at the time you were like, wow, this is insane. So
yeah, I felt like I was getting shipped off to, you know, war somewhere out there and never coming home.
Anyways, you go, you do all the camps, you're a camp kid that off season, you work with Bob for a little bit. It looks like you did a really nice job that next year. You went A, high A, double A. Maybe you can kind of talk about each of those stops. And then we've talked a lot with the guys just about the jump from basically A ball to double A and kind of like how that's where, you know, quote unquote, real professional baseball starts. Like you get guys that are not just talented, but also have played a lot. Kind of have an idea of on the mound or in the box of what they want to do in the game plan that they have. So maybe you can kind of talk about that year, some growing pains, some highlights, all that.
Yeah. I mean, just for an example, like I went from, you know, Appleton, Wisconsin, where there's no one, to playing with Jackson Chirio, in a span of 2 weeks. So it was crazy to go from that low A where you're facing guys that like are going to get released in the next week to guys that are now, you know, multi-millionaires. Yeah. So no, it's crazy. It's I think that's the biggest jump, is going from low A, or not low A, the single A's to double A. I think that's the big one. So, I mean, I know most people say the from double A to triple A is a pretty big jump, but I don't know. I don't really see it. We were such a good, strong, well-hitting conference down in double A that basically anything went out. So I think it really got me ready for here. So, you know.
What were some things that you learned from like the low A or the low A, high A to double A jump? Like, what were some things you're like, okay, this worked previously, you know, now I know like I'm not going to be able to do these things as much, you know, the farther I progressed.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was one of those things that like I basically threw something close and I got a swing to where you jump up to double A and guys are actually taking pitches that like are a ball off and you're like, what am I doing? Like, why is he not swinging? So I think the big thing is like the mindset of being able to like actually pitch to guys and not just throw balls, you know? So I think it was one of those things that like he actually had to understand how to play baseball compared to going to like junior college in low A and just kind of pitching.
Yeah.
You start to see the approach as like one.
Exactly.
Throughout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't just one guy. It was the whole lineup.
Yes.
Compared to.
Yeah. That's what I've heard. Like you have like, I've heard pitchers basically say you have like quote unquote free outs, like in low A and 100%. High A, where you have some guys that are either super raw and just don't know what they're doing yet. Or maybe they're, you know, like organizational guys that might be there a year or two, just kind of fill in a spot until the next draft. Whereas in double A and triple A, you know, triple A, you might have seven guys that you're facing that have had some kind of big league time, you know, and double A.
For example, on our team right now, we have Alfaro that has 8 years in the show. Davies, who has three as a pitcher. We have, I'm blanking on the rest. We had another guy, an outfielder that we just released actually that had like 4 years in the show. And I mean, that's just like a handful of guys on my team.
Yeah.
Like we were placing the Stripers that I swear half their team had at least 3 years in the show. So it's crazy how you go from, you know, one prospect on a team that you have to worry about to now looking at a lineup and being like, holy crap, I have my work cut out for me today.
You know? Where'd my free outs go?
They disappear really quick.
But yeah, I think that's the main thing, like on the hitting side that, you know, I talked to my guys about. It's just like shrinking the zone, learning how to shrink the zone. I think hitters, when they're young, are afraid to take strikes on the edge and get deep into counts. And I think the higher up and the farther up you go, especially watching big league games, like guys are not afraid to a pitch that they know they can't hit hard and just let the pitcher have it and then move on to the next one. And that's kind of what it sounds like you're talking about, where it's like, hey, they're not antsy. They're not just going up there to swing. Like they're actually, you know, hitting now. They're like, look, know what they're looking for. They know what you're trying to do. They know what their strength is, and they're going to wait for you to either mess up or feed them what they're good at.
Exactly. So. Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, you're getting scouting lineups in the dugout. When a guy's running from the bullpen, they pull up an iPad and they're like, this is his pitch. This is what you need to be looking for. And it's this whole rap sheet of stuff about one guy, not the whole team. So, no, it's crazy. It's crazy all the information they know.
It is. It's so nuts. We should probably dedicate a whole week to talking about the amount of information in baseball.
I mean, 100%. I mean, 100%. You guys have a lot more information than we do, but I mean, you can pull up a ton of stuff just on Baseball Savant.
Oh, yeah.
Like you can pull up, I don't know what the percent, like 80 to 90% of what teams are looking at through Baseball Savant.
I mean,
that's just like, it's pretty crazy.
For example, in junior college, we had one coach that would go and travel around and actually wasn't with us. And he would scout for us, scout games, and like give us a information sheet. Was it any good? Sometimes. But
hey, I'm going to defend that guy, all right? Here, because that was, as a hitting coach at college, your job is like to scout the pitchers, obviously. So like the easiest thing is you look at, you know, stats, right? Like innings pitched to strikeouts, like, okay, is he a swing and miss guy? Does he have probably like a plus pitch? You know, how are the walks? How are the hits per nine? And then you watch. Sometimes the camera setup is great when you're watching online. Sometimes it's all the way to the backstop, zoomed out, and you can't see anything. And you're like, I don't know. he looks like he's like 88. He's probably like 88. And then you get there and he's like 84 and everybody's looking at you. You're like, listen, listen, guys, I'm working with nothing here. So I'm going to defend that guy. I'm defending him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just think it's crazy that, you know, I think now high school teams are doing it where they're getting that information of pitchers and all that stuff. So, no, yeah. It's one of those things that you have to learn how to take that information in. And I think it's really important.
So when you made that double A jump, like obviously you talked about playing with Jackson Chirios and he's a dog.
Insane.
He's
so good. It's crazy.
Him and Jackson Merrill, they're fun to watch right now if you want young outfield hitters to look at. Merrill just got paid too, so that was good for him.
They both did.
They both did.
Chirio?
Yeah.
He has like a 10-year, 80-something million dollar contract.
Okay, they both did. I missed that. Good for them. When you made that double A jump, do you remember like either the team, like the lineup that you faced, or like a few of the hitters where you're like, okay, like this is different. Like I'm going to, like you were talking about, I have to like really buckle down. And if I mess up, they're going to make me, you know, pay for it.
I think my biggest thing with going to double A was definitely finding guys at teams that like you knew were coming close. I mean, I think it was weird. Cause like, you know, now you're hearing about he's with Durham. He's like, just like last week, he just made a base hit to the first baseman. Ground ball to first baseman Simpson or something.
Fast guy for the Rays, Chandler. I'll look him up real quick. Go ahead.
But yeah. So, I mean, you start figuring those guys out and you're like, holy crap. Like, who is this kid? Like, I've never heard of him before, but you know, you're facing the Montgomery Biscuits, who is the Rays double A. And you're like, you pull into Montgomery, Alabama, and all of a sudden this dude lays down a bunt straight back to you and you field it and you look over at first and he's standing on first.
Like, yeah, Chandler Simpson.
What am I supposed to do with this? You start realizing like there's some guys on the team that you're better off just hitting and letting him run to third base and knowing that like entrusting your stuff and being like, I can get two guys out behind him as long as I can get, you know, somehow figure out on a strikeout, you're like, okay, he's not going to score. So it's one of those things that you kind of got to play around guys and, you know, so.
Yeah, the Simpson guy, maybe don't hit him. He stole 104 bases last year, not 94 the year before.
But that's what I'm saying. You just kind of just let him on and you're like, you don't really worry about it. There was one time that I literally hit him, picked off three times again, and he was at third base. And I'm like, I don't really care. Do your thing.
Quit worrying about him because that'll.
Yeah, the coach I played for in college, we were playing this team in our regional, and they had two guys that stole over 50 bases in college, which is a lot. And he looked at all of us, and he just goes, hey, he looked at our catcher, he goes, don't worry about them. The best way to get them to not steal bases is to not let them on. So if they get on, they're probably going to take second. And I, you know, as a competitor, like, oh, I don't know. But it's like, that's reality. Like, if he gets on, he's probably taking second. So the best way to get him to not steal bases is just to not let him on. So. But yeah,
accept it and you put him on third and you just don't worry about it.
Hey, we're going to intentionally walk him, but just you can just throw him at third base. Just go to third.
Yeah, just I don't want to deal with you on the base pass. So come
on. That's awesome.
I think it's one of those things that like you also start playing the same guys. So I think like, for example, we played Montgomery, I don't know, about a billion times and we played the Wahoos about a billion times. So you start realizing like this guy can steal. This guy can really hit. Another guy he's more of like one of those slap guys that's looking for outside a pitch on that outer half and is just going to slap it into right field. So I think it's one of those things that like you just slowly start remembering names, remembering faces, remembering at bats, and you start playing around that. So I think that was the big jump.
I think this is a good question because I remember we had Riley Pint on and he was talking about when he can't remember where he went. It was, I think, in like A ball. He said he threw a pitch to Jazz Chisholm and he hit a bomb and he was just like confused because he's never gave up a home run before. He was like, what just happened? You didn't give up any home. I mean, you gave up a couple in JUCO. I'm sure it was like in Oklahoma where the wind was blowing a billion miles an hour out or something.
Yeah.
But it looks like in A you gave up a couple home. Do you remember those pitches and were you surprised when it happened or?
Nope.
Like, what happened? Because I'm sure it was a shock to you. Like, you had thrown basically, you know, 70 something innings. Yeah. Wall, and you're like, wow, I just don't give up home runs. Get you.
So my first ever home run I gave up in Double A was to Jacob Berry, which he was I believe an LSU kid, a big D1 prospect, like big D1 guy. You know, Marlins pick him up, starts going through their system. Never faced him. We don't really play the Marlins. The Marlins are more like Southern leagues.
So yeah.
Through my whole professional career, I never really played him. Finally get to Double A. We're facing the Wahoos and we're sitting there and they're like, hey, pretty big bat. Need to watch out for this one. And I'm like, I throw 100. I haven't been touched my whole career. Who cares? I throw him a fastball in his hands and he absolutely laces a ball down the line. Luckily, it was foul. And I'm like, holy fuck. Like, oh, sorry. But that was like the first like real big hit someone's ever hit off me. And I just put this ball on his knuckles and somehow he still has the power to put it down the line. So foul ball, next pitch, I'm like, can't throw that again. He's already on my 100. So I'm like, damn, okay. So I throw a curveball, get a gross swing. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to do it again. So I throw one in, leave it hanging a little outside half, just kind of flicks it, put it in the water over in left field. He literally went from a fastball on his fist that he pulled down the line, down the right field line, to just absolutely hammering a hanging curveball that I left over the outer third to over into the ocean of Pensacola. So no, I think it was an eye-opening experience to finally face.
Not a bad guy to do that too, though. First round, sixth overall pick. He had like 15 pumps at LSU, and then the year before he had 17 at Arizona. So not a bad guy to give up your first home run. Yeah, not a slouch. So
no,
at least it wasn't like one of my roommate in college had no earned runs through his first five starts. He was just shoving five or six starts. And we went and played one of the worst teams in our conference and the wind was blowing out and this little leadoff slap hitter like hit one up into the air pull side that would have been an out every other day and went over the wall. And I remember he just like looked in the dugout and was just baffled by what happened.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well, not to change the subject here, but my first collegiate outing, we're at St. Louis University, and I'm from St. Louis, so I had a ton of family there to come see my first outing. Didn't go so well. And anyway, this guy hits a bomb off me. No big deal. Like, I'd given up home runs before, but after the guy rounds the bases, they come on the PA, and they go, congratulations to, I forget the guy's name, his first ever home run for fifth-year senior. And I was like,
my God.
No.
Jackson Goddard works out and throws here. And he was telling me that last year with the Monarchs, he said he was like pitching to this guy and it was like a 12 pitch at bat. And then he finally ends it with like a single up the middle. And he said he was like, man, that guy was good. He's just a really good player. And he went back and looked and it was his first professional hit. He was like, damn. but yeah, I mean, looks like Double A, like had some success. Looks like it was a little up and down, 5.5 ERA. So obviously like, learned a lot. You went to three different levels just from like a organizational standpoint. Like that's really impressive. I'm sure you were like more than on schedule for what they wanted you to do.
Yeah,
and then you report back in Double A, which is very common. Usually like a lot of times with guys like yourself, who's a high prospect, like they'll start you wherever you finished. You can kind of dominate the level that you finished at the previous year, and then they kind of advance you, which is exactly what they did with you. So you went back to Double A through 79 innings, 3.5 ERA, 105 strikeouts. So maybe you can kind of talk about the adjustments there, or really honestly, was it kind of like what you were saying with junior college? You just threw a lot more, got used to the level, and kind of learned from the mistakes the previous year.
Yeah, I think it was that. I think it was exactly that. So I think it was more of like actually going with my strengths and not hanging a curveball to where those guys hit. Like, you're at the level where any little mistake, they're going to take advantage of. So I think it's one of those things that, like, you have to just go with your best stuff and you can't try and beat them with your B pitch. It's always the A pitch. And so I think it's one of those things that, like, I finally figured that out and trusted that, you know, I throw 100. Most guys can't hit this. And when they do, it's not going to be the outcome that they're hoping for. It's going to be a win in my book. So.
Yeah, hitting's hard, man.
Hitting's hard. It's really hard when you throw 100 at 6'7", where the ball's like on top of you.
Yes.
Right when you release it. So.
And so, and is that the year you went to the Futures game then? Or was that the previous year?
No, that was the previous year.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Was it? They're all blending.
I know last year you played in the spring breakout game, which we talked about that.
Yes.
On one of our podcasts. Maybe you can talk about the Futures game and the, because you played in it last year and you played in the spring breakout again this year, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe you can kind
of
talk
about the outcome this year, but yes.
Yeah. 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 We don't have to talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
People can look that up if they want to. But maybe you can talk about that. We had, like I said previously, Robbie Glendinning came on. He plays for Team Australia. And so he talked a lot about, like, you know, he's an A ball or high A ball player. He goes to Japan and he plays in front of like 60,000 people. And then he came back and he's like, wow, you know, playing in front of double A crowds is really not that big of a deal. I know games are televised in minor leagues, but obviously like the Futures game, there's a lot more eyeballs, and same with the spring breakout. So do you feel like those kind of things help? Like just knowing like, hey, there's a lot of people playing, kind of getting used to that. Cause obviously all of this is preparation for the big leagues, which I'm sure you know this, but a lot more people watch those games.
Yes, definitely. I mean, yeah, the Futures game was, it was insane. I mean, you went to Seattle, so new ballpark. And for me, you know, it was really cool to, you know, I mean, I don't know how many countless Ichiro games I've watched over the years of him and, you know, playing. So I think it was one of those things that, like, you finally get there and you're like, holy cow. Like, I think that was the first time that I, like, thought, like, holy shit, I actually made it. Like, this is, like, something huge. And then all of a sudden we're sitting there in BP and fans start coming in and they start coming in and they keep coming in and they keep coming in. And before I know it, like, there's a good 20,000 fans 3 hours before the game actually starts, and we're sitting there and everyone's yelling like, this is BP. Kids are hitting home runs into the third deck and fans are freaking out. And no, it was crazy. It was insane experience, and wouldn't change it. You know, I go out and performed really well for a insane crowd, but no, it was, the run out from the bullpen was, it was crazy. I just remember like going out, going down the steps, and finally the gate opens and you're just like, holy crap.
So, like, could you feel your legs once you got to the mound?
No, not at all. No, they were jello. So, you know, the pitching coach or the head coach, like, took a second. He was like, hey, sink it in, recover. Let's do your shit. Like, go do it. Go do what you're known for. So no, it was fun. Had Carol back there for me. So was a guy that I've thrown to a lot. So I think that helped a lot.
Do you remember any of the big name? Did you face any of the big name guys in that lineup, or do you remember the guys that you did face?
I faced a few guys from the A's. I'm trying to think who exactly I faced, but no, every now and then, I actually face one of those guys again. And every game they're like, dude, it's still the exact same. It's crazy. Like, they're like, no, awesome. there was one guy from the A's that I faced that I ended up breaking his bat at the Futures game. And he's like, I still don't know how you move the ball, like how you do. And he was like, no, it was crazy. It was fun. That's so awesome.
And then the spring breakout games, how are those? I mean, the MLB added those. I think, you know, I'm a baseball nerd, so I enjoy watching those because you can kind of see like, oh, these guys are on the top 100. You know, every team is really encouraged to send like their top 30 prospects to it, you know, within reason, obviously, like injuries, or, you know, they're not going to send a high school kid that just got drafted last year a lot of times, but within reason, they send all of their top 30 and they want as many top 100. So is that environment pretty similar to the Futures game, or how do you kind of rank that compared to it?
That's nowhere close.
Huh?
It's nowhere close.
Nowhere close.
I mean, yeah, you're going from basically a big league game, what it felt like, to like just another backfield scrimmage game.
Okay.
So that just happened to be televised.
Okay.
So I think it was one of those things, like in spring training, like you face guys that, you know, like my first year we faced the Rangers, I believe. So you face, like, I think Kuma might have been there. He might have been on the other team. You know, they're two, you know, Kuma and I'm blanking on the second pitcher. But, you know, you had those two big prospect pitchers. And then, like,
Kumar Leiter. Is that who you're talking about?
Leiter. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. So they had both of those out there. So it was kind of cool to see them. But no, I think it's just one of those, it just felt like another game to me.
Yeah.
More than an actual, like, big deal. Like, there, of course, there was a lot, like, there's definitely a few, a little bit more fans at the game. But no, I don't think it was nearly the same as the Futures game.
So. Yeah, the environment just wasn't nearly there.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Well, on TV, you can't tell. It's still cool. But I guess the big thing I wanted to ask is you did well in AA starter. They call you up to AAA and you come out of the pen. Until that moment, you had started every game you appeared in. So was there a big transition with that? Or was it pretty much the same? Did it change your preparation at all?
I mean, I think it was definitely different, like on the workout side of things, more than like actually pitching. Like for me as a starter, I barely throw any pregame. So I think that helps a lot with the transition over to the bullpen, to where you kind of got to be ready within like 15 to 20 pitches. And sometimes you don't even get 15. So I think it was one of those things that, like, for me, being able to, you know, be warm in 10 pitches helped a lot. So I think it was one of those things that made it really easy for my transition over to the bullpen. I mean, yeah, it was the first one was different. I mean, I think I came in the seventh and we were up by 14 runs, and I went in and struck out two and gave up a ground ball and then got a pop fly, and I think I was out of it. But no, I think it for me, it feels the same as starting. It's just a little different being sitting in the bullpen and really not knowing when they're going to radio down for your name to, like, hey, going in next inning. So
yes. It's just an adjustment. A little more adrenaline there in the bullpen setting, to where like the starting is such routine based. I mean, you know, like to the minute what you're going to be doing that day.
Exactly.
I think the high leverage bullpen, I always thought those would be fun. High leverage, I mean, it's probably nerve wracking, but I always thought it'd be fun. Like, if you're the fireman on the bullpen, like every situation you go into, you know, is like super competitive and ready to go. Cause like, I mean, I was never a pitcher, but you're starting pitcher and you're up 5-0 in the fourth inning. It's like, all right, now let's just see how many outs I can collect. Whereas like you come in the seventh inning or second and third with one out, game tying runs on third, like, you know, every pitch you're about to make is super important. So I always thought that role would be really fun, really cool to do.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think the scariest position is the guy coming in, having to clean up three innings and being up by four or five runs. Because you're like, I cannot give up this. Like, you don't want to look like that guy that just lost a four or five run lead. So I think that's more, for me, of the panic situation of like, holy shit, I actually have to, like,
when it's like a 98% win percentage, yeah. And you're like, exactly. Okay, I can't be the 2% here.
Don't exactly.
Get comfortable.
Don't do it.
You're just sitting down there, by one at all times.
Yeah. Up or down one. Run around
up or down one. You know, give me this really stressful situation where if something bad happens, like, it was meant to be, you know. Compared to, like, holy crap, like, we're up by 10, like, you know, you start running through your head of like, holy shit, I'm panicking, you know. So no, I really liked going in the ninth and being able to, you know, be the guy to just 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3 and mow him down. And I think that was the most fun.
That kind of brings us to this year, man. So what have the plans been? Do you know if they're going to start you or put you back in the pen? Obviously, we kind of talked about how, like, they want you to start in the level that you finished at, and looks like you got sent to AAA after finishing there last year. So do they have a plan for you? Is it going to be like bullpen or starter? Or is it still kind of up in the air?
So what I've been told is starter 100%. And, you know, last week we had a guy come down from the big leagues, and so things change, and you got to get innings in. So I turned into a long relief guy this last week. So
it was
a fun experience, you know. But
out away from your first professional save?
It was not my first professional save. My first professional save came last year. And I had two, I believe.
Okay.
But yeah, they were both here. They were both at Nashville. So awesome. Yeah, it would have been either been the third or fourth professional save.
Okay.
But, yeah. Nice. So.
So.
Well, then not as frustrating when you.
Yeah, but also very frustrating, yes.
Sorry, I just had to bring it up because I know we had texted about it
earlier. Yes, yes. So no, it's all good. You know, they had they have the goal in mind and can't really play GM. It's a hard thing to do. Correct. So
you just pitch you just pitch and keep dominating, and then the GM will do what he's supposed to do eventually with you.
And you hope and pray. Yes, of course.
But well, Jake, obviously you've got, you know, high aspirations. Obviously making the big leagues, like super close to doing that, you know, one level away, having a lot of success in the level you're at. You're a top 100 prospect on MLB. What do you think, or like pitching wise, kind of getting in the weeds, you and Bob can kind of talk about this. What are some things that you feel like are your strengths, getting guys out at a high clip, and maybe some stuff that you've added or taken away since you started your career?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big thing for me was understanding the fastball and where it plays and where it doesn't play. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to say where it doesn't play because it's 100. Most guys can't catch up to it. But for the guys that can, the top of the zone for me was a huge game changer, understanding that my ball rides really well and can stay on a plane. And it's gotten a lot of outs for me with understanding that and being able to throw to my strengths with the fastball.
And then Bob, since you saw Jake as a high school kid, where do you think he's made some of his biggest jumps just as a pitcher and through his professional career?
I mean, in the fastball consistency, I think that's been your biggest thing once you understood how to actually get behind the ball. You got way more consistent with your command of it, and then the ball played way better too. I mean, I remember like the first time we threw, and I was given a TrackMan report of Jake, and it was like 31% and this isn't like exaggerated, this is a real number, and it was like 97.
Yeah.
97, 31%.
If we can just clean that
efficiency.
Up.
Efficiency. And so, I mean, and that's, Jake will tell you, that's why I made him like do this throwing that forces you to get behind the ball for weeks and weeks. And it's not fun. Like it.
No. It sucked, yeah. It sucked, but it helped a lot. So I think it was one of those things that Bob helped with, just not really like creating pitches, but more just like shaping them and cleaning everything up.
Correct.
So.
And everything is as consistent, as tight as possible. Yeah, I mean, your slider, like I know we've talked, like your slider's getting harder. It's lost a little bit of its sweep and turning more like a natural cutter, but like still a very good pitch.
Well, Bob, this week, 4 broken bats on that pitch alone.
There you go.
So it works.
Rusty lumber.
So, yeah.
No, I'm
that's
saying
the pitch is my guy. Don't be doing that.
The pitch is very good, and the curveball, the pitch is very good. And it's a shocker to everybody, but the changeup's actually very good. You just start throwing it.
I threw one last week.
Did you?
17-10.
What was the outcome?
A strike. threw it to a lefty. Threw it right at his hip. Got it in the bottom corner. Strike.
Let's go.
Kid froze. Wasn't ready for it. So no.
Yeah. Everybody was like, "What the hell? He's got a changeup?"
There was who was it? It was in spring training this year, I think. Maybe it was last year. It was Craig Kimbrell had never thrown a professional changeup in his entire career. And I think it was Stott for the Phillies that was hitting. I think it was him. But he threw a changeup, and you saw him back away and just like look down. Like, was that really just a changeup? And then he got in there again, and he threw another changeup. And I think he swung through, and he looked at the dugout and just like shook his head like, what is that? And then the announcer was like, those were Craig Kimbrell's first 2 professional changeups of his career.
Yeah. So
those weren't on the scouting report.
They were not on the scouting report.
I can guarantee you the kid that I faced that I threw a changeup to looked exactly like that and looked in the dugout and was like, what was that? Like,
what am I supposed to do now?
Is what? Yeah, thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
I wasn't supposed to worry about that. It's 2% of the time. Why is he throwing this?
I don't even think it was 2. I think it was just not on there.
At like 0.01.
Well, Jacob, I guess we kind of always finish on a lighter note. I guess a couple things I was going to ask is some guys that you faced or maybe watched throw in the minor leagues these past year in AAA, hitters faced, watch guys on your team or pitchers you've seen throw. Like, who are some guys that you think people should look up and that you think are kind of on the rise, ready to make the big leagues and make an impact?
I mean, for example, teammates think a big one right now on the pitching side would be Logan Henderson, a disgusting changeup. It's probably one of the grossest ones I've ever seen. And, you know, right there with him with another gross, gross changeup is Craig Yoho. He also disgusting. And, you know, the hitter side, I think Jacob Berry is a good one. I think he is someone that is going to go really far. That you want to throw up? So I think that's a big one. I can't think of his name. There's another big bat for the Rays that I'm blanking on the name.
Here, I got you. I can pull up their top prospects real quick. Are they in AAA right now?
I believe so.
Carson Williams, shortstop.
Yes, great, great fielder.
Xavier Isaac.
Yeah, Xavier Isaac.
Yeah,
Brayden
another big
Taylor,
one.
Trey Morgan. Those guys are all in AA, AAA. Chandler Simpson that you called out earlier.
Chandler Simpson. And then there's like, I don't know. I'm blanking on the name, but I'm trying to think. What's another guy that I could... We have that. I mean, from last week, probably one of the better ones was Wilder from the Stripers. Actually, a Kansas City guy. I don't know if you know him. Have you heard of Wilder?
Yeah, it sounds... What's his first name?
Zach's
going to look it up. Don't worry.
What team
was it? I'm blanking. He's on the Stripers right now, but he just got traded from the...
Who are the Stripers affiliated for?
Atlanta. He was with the Rays before. He just got traded. But another pretty big arm that is actually becoming a starter from what I'm hearing. So I think he'll be pretty good.
Corey Wilder?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
He's the city guy. He actually, I think he works out at your with Gordon over at the other your other location. So I met him at PSP.
Okay.
3. So I worked out with him over there. So good guy. Really good guy.
That's awesome. Well, I don't know if you have anything else, Jacob, but I think, you know, we have a lot of high school, college guys in the facility, obviously. So if you had any, I guess, like not pitching advice, but just like how to progress your career, like maybe some of the, you hear them say like intangibles that you've just seen, you've obviously seen a lot of guys progress, make the big leagues. You've seen a lot of guys kind of stagnate at a level. Do you have any advice for kids of like just qualities that you see in guys that are able to continue to get better and better?
I mean, I think the biggest one was just being a good teammate. I mean, I think that's easier said than done. You run into a lot of guys in this level that are very, very talented and end up sticking at, you know, low A because they're not a good teammate. So I think it's one of those things that you just need to learn how to be a good teammate and not be a bad person on the field and off the field especially. So I think it's one of those things that it's hard to learn, but once you do and you finally figure it out, you'll be in a good position.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think that's like anything. Like we talked about this with another one of our interviews. Like nobody wants to hang out with somebody that sucks all day. And like, I mean, it's just to be honest with you, like if you know, I came in with a bad attitude every day, like Trevor and Bob would probably not want me to be here every day, you know? And that's
exactly
just, it's the same thing with, you know, you guys. And I know it's different. It's hard because as professional pitchers, you know, you guys are, if you're doing well, that means somebody else isn't getting innings. And so it's really hard to like, you know, put your own ego aside and like really think about the betterment of the guy next to you. And it's just a hard concept in general.
Yeah.
But if you are able to do that, I can't remember where I heard that from or heard this from, but they were talking about like, if you just think about and you're focused on like helping other people, like your problems, you won't focus on your own problems as much. And I do think that is something that can help as a professional athlete. Like I never played professionally, but I do think like the game is kind of set up, especially in the minor leagues, to think about yourself individually, which obviously there's pros and cons, like it, that's just part of it. It's your own profession, but it is still a team game and you are still like supposed to be a good teammate to the people around you. And so I do think that's good advice. And I think it's hard, especially with, you know, high school kids. Now we have all the showcases and the individual recruiting and all this stuff. And I think it's hard a lot for them to realize, like, if you're just a good teammate and you're taking care of your job, a lot of that stuff falls into place. And so it's good to hear that from someone like yourself, who's obviously having a lot of individual success right now.
Yeah. I mean, for example, I mean, this last outing of mine, I got really torn up and was very upset coming in the dugout. And, you know, we won the game and team was excited. Team's playing music in the clubhouse. And I'm sitting over there in my locker, you know, just thinking about what I could have done better and not walked, you know, a few guys and maybe I finish it. And I had countless teammates come up to me that like, hey, you're going to get over this. Like, I know it sucks, but, you know, just being great guys and trying to help me through this. So I think it's one of those things that, yeah, you definitely got to understand and help out.
For sure. Well, that's kind of all I got. Bob, you got anything else?
No, Jake, we appreciate you taking the time. Hopefully the next time we talk to you, you'll be up in Milwaukee and we can do a revisit episode to see the transition.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
And if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Jacob throw before, like, I know this word gets kind of thrown around a lot, but Jacob is kind of a unicorn. He's like 6'7" and throws super hard. And so go out there and look. And I mean, his arm gets into some pretty crazy.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah.
So. It's also hard to watch when my page, because it just starts hurting. You're like, oh, I actually do get into that position. So no.
Yeah. You
no,
don't watch. It's exciting. Let us do that.
You just can't do that.
Yeah. You just focus on what you're doing and keep getting those outs and then let other people watch.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Well, Jake, thanks for coming on. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week.
Like and subscribe.